AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Holy smokes, the cattle market crashed for a second time this week. Frustration is overflowing in that market, and for good reason. The lean hog market rallied in the face of the freefall in cattle. And over in the grain trade, corn slightly lower, beans higher, wheat posted solid gains.
Live. Clean up in aisle 4-5, please.
Be a Farm Journal broadcast. This is AgriTalk. This afternoon, it's a conversation with Mark Welch from Texas A&M. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now, say hello to the host of AgriTalk. It's Chip Flory.
All right. Aisle 4-5 must be where they store the cattle, huh?
Well, yes, a bit of a bovine, should we call it a spill? An inelegant spill in aisle 4-5 in the cattles.
That was bad.
Oof.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
You know, when we had Brian on, welcome to AgriTalk. I'm Chip, that's Davis.
Hello.
When we had Brian on Markets Now at the bottom of the hour on this morning show, and he mentioned that, you know, it looks kind of like the funds are deciding they don't want to be in the market over the weekend because of bird flu into bovines. When he said that, it was, you know, it was kind of like I felt a little bit of a shiver when he said that, because I thought, man, oh man, he's saying that and we're down like a buck and a half or $2 in fats.
Yeah.
What if it really turns into something? Well, it really turned into something.
The afternoon says, hold my beer.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah. Some big, big losses in the cattle trade here today. Frustration doesn't even begin to describe how cattlemen are feeling about this. Bird flu has not gotten into the beef at all that we know of.
Right.
Yet that is being... that is being cited as the reason for the sell-off in live cattle and feeder cattle. And, you know, beyond that, I'm not even sure if I understand that, because it's not like the disease or the virus would force a bunch of cattle onto the market all at one time, or that it's going to kill a bunch of cattle, or that it's going to change basically anything at all. You know what it might do is it might slow down marketings. If it puts cattle off a feed for three or four days, it could slow down marketings by 3 or 4 days. And if it takes that animal a bit of time to recover, maybe it takes a week, maybe 10 days to get that animal back on feed and recovered. But to think that it's going to have, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. And if I am missing something, please tell me what it is. Tell me what it is, guys. I just don't. This is all psychological, and this big sell off that we saw in the cattle trade today, it's pretty tough to take. But here we are on Friday afternoon. That's pretty easy to take.
Whew, it is Friday. I will take it. Yes.
Darn 100%. Right. Okay. What do you say? I'm looking forward to the conversation with Mark coming up here in just a little bit. It's always good to get it. He does such a great job of look back through the notes, does such a great job of taking what are bits and pieces of uncertainty. And putting them into order in those balance sheets. Well, we got a supply and demand report coming next week. It's a good time to take those bits and pieces of uncertainty and try to make them make sense on the balance sheet. So we're going to have Mark do that for us.
Well, sounds great. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get to the news.
Chip, May soft red winter wheat futures closed on the plus side of 560 for the first time this week. May hard red winter wheat futures traded on both sides of 580 for an eighth consecutive session and closed above that pivotal level. Now, that should help HRW test resistance at today's high of 591 and a quarter sometime early next week. Headlines from Russia this week suggest the flow of wheat to the export market is running into some headwinds. That helped the U.S. market recover most of early week losses. Good spring conditions for the U.S. HRW wheat crop were also a weight on wheat prices this week. July HRW wheat futures 6.5 cents higher, 579.5. July SRW wheat up 10.25 to 581.75. July spring wheat closed at 656.5. Chip, that's up 1.75 cents.
Yeah, I checked this just now just to be sure, but July SRW wheat on the week up 6 cents. So not too bad there. The July HRW wheat down 0.25 cents.
Okay.
And July spring wheat up 3.5 cents.
Late pressure on wheat prices pulled corn futures down from session highs. May corn posted a mid-range open and closed just below the opening range. Professional trading funds remain short the corn market, and while some short covering was possible this week, funds generally defended short positions. Traders are watching the development of the Safrina corn crop, where conditions have turned dry, but the chance for rains early next week in key areas capped price support. Brazilian weather in the week ahead should have a daily impact on price action.
Yep.
May corn futures today a penny lower, 434.25. July corn down 0.75 cents, 446.75. December corn futures closed at 472.5, down 0.75 cents.
It's that time of the year. Pay very close attention to what's going on with the corn crop in Brazil. July corn on the week down 7.75 cents. December corn on the week down 5.25.
May soybean futures traded on both sides of 11.75 for a fourth consecutive session. And for the third time this week, front month beans rejected trade below that critical support level. Beans are stuck in the middle of a sideways trading range. Harvest activity has ramped up in Argentina and should move quickly over the next 2 weeks. That could increase hedge pressure in the bean market. Soybean meal futures were slightly lower today, with bean oil prices moderately higher. The rally in crude oil futures this week helped soybean oil futures trade higher on the week. May soybeans were a nickel higher today at 11.85. July beans up 4.5 cents, 11.96.75. November beans closed at 11.84.75, up a penny today.
Yeah, July soybeans on the week down 8.5 cents. November beans down just 1.5 cents. July soybean oil up 91 points. And July soybean meal down $4.80.
Well, Chip, the price slide in cotton prices accelerated on the drop through support at last Thursday's low. Today, July cotton 75 points lower, 87.82. Maybe could have been worse today for the cotton.
Well, it was pretty bad on the week, down 415 points.
All right. Well, on your livestock, cattle futures traders decided to exit long positions ahead of the weekend as the market adjusts to the uncertainty of what high-path bird flu and dairy cattle might mean for the industry going forward. That pulled the rug out from under cattle prices, with June fat cattle $3.80 lower, 172.05. October down 305, 173.35. May feeder futures $5.70 lower, 238.17.5. And let's head over to the snout side, where June lean hog futures gapped higher, then slipped back to fill the gap before pushing sharply higher into new contract highs. May hogs $2.47.5 higher, 97.55. June contract up $2.90, 107.90, Chip.
All right. And on the week, this is going to be hard to hear, okay?
Oof.
On the week, June live cattle down $8.20. May feeder cattle down $10.52.5. And June lean hogs on the week, here's some good news, up $6.45.
Whoa!
That's a huge rally. While I've been watching the beatings taking place in cattle, I'll admit I missed a $6.50 rally in hogs. Shouldn't do that, probably. Should probably notice stuff like that, I guess.
Yeah, you got a lot of irons in the fire.
There are.
A lot to keep straight.
Yeah, we'll have Mark sorted out for us.
There you go.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, Timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
On your favorite radio station or your preferred digital device, AgriTalk is live every weekday.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Dude, Davis, I don't know if you've heard about this or not, what's going on in women's basketball, but there's like these four teams that are left in this big tournament.
Here's a thing. Yeah.
Yeah, apparently. It's a thing. And evidently they play tonight, those four teams.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you got South Carolina versus NC State and Iowa versus UConn. Holy smokes, this is going to be fun.
I'll be honest. You know how much I know about sports, so I don't even know what I'm talking about here. I'm so glad the Hawkeyes beat LSU. I'm just, I found that very satisfying.
Good.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. I think that there are a lot of people from your home state that would absolutely 100% agree with you.
Well, there we go.
There you go. See, there it is. There it is. You can take the boy out of Iowa, but you can't take the Iowa out of the boy.
Well, I had to leave the state. I had to leave the state for this to happen. Let's not forget that.
That's right. That's
but
right.
But the Royals did beat the White Sox 10-1, so
okay.
I don't know.
That's good. That's good. Yeah, no, some phenomenal potential. Some potentially phenomenal basketball games to be played tonight. Now, with the expectations as high as they are, you know that that also leaves a lot of room for disappointment, right?
That's right. That's right. You get everybody leaning on the same side of the canoe or something.
That's
something
right.
in there like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Let's get into what's going on in these grain markets.
Focus, yes.
Have a conversation with Mark Welch, professor and extension economist for grain marketing at Texas A&M University. Mark, it's great to get you back on here. How are you?
Well, good afternoon. Doing well. Great to join you one more time. Thanks a lot for the invitation.
Yeah, glad you're here. Glad you're here. Like I said earlier, I love the way that you make sense out of some of disjointed factors that are happening in the grain markets right now. And you've done that for us in the past. And that's kind of what I want to do as we look forward to next Thursday and another supply and demand report. Now, it's the first one that's going to incorporate the prospective plantings report numbers. We're not all the way to, I shouldn't have even said that because it doesn't. We don't even take a look at the 24-25 marketing year until May, do we?
That is correct. Yes.
Yeah.
And typically what USDA will do, unless there's some, dramatic development, for instance, weather-wise, we're running way behind in planting or something like that, we saw, say, in 2019, where we couldn't get in the field until June. Typically, what USDA will do is in that May was the first official projections or estimates for the new crop marketing year. They'll just take that planted acres survey number from prospective planting and just plug it right into the balance sheet. But in April, really, I think next week, we're probably more focused on maybe some domestic, grain use issues and changes. But I think Brazil, has to be the big story. And the first page I'm going to flip to when we print off that report will be, what's happened to South American production.
Yep. The range of estimates on that Brazilian bean crop, the range of estimates on the Brazilian corn crop, Mark, is as wide as I've ever seen it as late in the year as it is. Why?
Right. And it's so interesting to see the divergence of conditions, evidently in Brazil, and it's affects parts of Argentina as well. When we think of our La Nina and El Nino weather patterns and how beneficial an El Nino is for those of us here in the Southern Plains, and we look forward to those events. Really, historically, that tends to have a warmer and drier impact over much of Brazil, the central and especially northern crop production areas. Now, Argentina is much more similar to the southern plain states here in the U.S. So I think the impact of the heat and the drought and is just beginning to show up. And, you know, as we've seen, even in this country, many times you really don't know just how hard that was on the crop until the combines start running. And it's particularly that combination. I think what we saw, you know, in much of the Corn Belt last year here in the U.S., yes, it was significantly drier than normal in many areas, but it just didn't get that hot. Yeah. And so it's amazing what these varieties and with our farming techniques and soil health technologies and that we're incorporating into our cropping systems now that we can withstand a lot. But if you can avoid that combination, I think that's the key. And evidently, significantly large areas in Brazil did not. And that they had the combination of the heat and drought. And that's going to show up in the harvest numbers coming out now. And then I think also play into some production numbers for that second corn crop and the competition that's going to give the U.S. producers as we look at the export markets here for 2024.
Well, and we're figuring out just how big that second corn crop might be. We're figuring that out right now, aren't we?
Right. And of course, you know, in terms of planted acres, and it's so interesting to watch the condition ratings of that crop, the maturity and development of that crop is really very similar to what we see down here in Central Texas. You know, we've got a corn crop that we'll plant in late February, early March. And we've got a lot of corn that's, you know, about boot top high now, really off to a great start. And so by the time we get to late July, first part of August, that thing's going to be pretty well done. And so that's going to be, of course, then just ahead of the rest of the country here in the U.S. with the as the Corn Belt reaches maturity. So it's just kind of a leading edge. And certainly if we're looking for some degree of maybe some uplift in these corn markets, I think that will be one key one to watch is the development, the crop condition ratings that come off that Brazil crop, and of course the production numbers. And the biggest estimate we get that we talk about every month is in the WASDE. And so, next week that's where we need to start looking.
Okay. Gotcha. Now, Mark, we're at that time of the year where we're watching the South American crop develop. We're taking a look at how basis might be starting to adjust to some supply issues in the U.S. market, because if they're going to start to show up, now's when they should start to show up if there's any big issues on supply regionally. And all of this is happening at a time when we're getting some messages from China in particular that corn imports do not seem to be a priority for China right now, whether it be, you know, out of Brazil, let alone the U.S., right?
Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of information that I'm picking up as well. Yeah. And there are probably several factors behind that. And one may be just, you know, the absolute level of stocks that China holds, which are enormous from what we, you know, read from the WASDE reports every month. Yeah. But my understanding is that the expectations for increased feed use in their livestock industry are being dampened. To some degree, not seeing a lot of growth in their pork industry. And they are looking even at a larger corn crop. They're planting more acres. Their technologies are getting better. Their yields are getting better. You know, they plant about as much corn as we do in this country, but their yields have typically been, you know, half to two thirds of ours. And so if they catch up yield wise, certainly that could be a major game changer for the corn market. So I think we're seeing perhaps some influence of those kind of factors behind the scenes, you know, domestically in China, that they just may not have the needs to import corn, at least, you know, in the short term, you know, Mark, on the pace they've had recently.
Mark, what was it? Was it 10 years ago China was still exporting corn?
Yeah, something like that. I think, I wish I had the chart right in front of me. 2004, somewhere along in there, they were like the third largest exporter in the world.
Yeah,
for corn, it's crazy.
Then they turned into the wild card in the import market, and now we're talking about them increasing their yields because of some of the changes that they're making on their, you know, they're approving some GMO events. I would assume that's going to help their yields. Sure. They may and step out of the import market for a while, huh?
Well, and they really could. They would have a lot of untapped capacity. Now they have issues with, you know, arable land and you know, water and other, you know, the resources you have to put together to make that happen. But certainly I think there is, you know, again, quite a bit of slack there that they could fill with quite a bit of corn.
Oh, man. You know, and I look at the bean market, and we'll talk about this more after the break, but I look at the bean market and I can see domestic demand here in the U.S. to take up some slack. But on corn, I don't like the fact that we are not that we've given up as much export share to South America as we have. Now, if the export market gets smaller, that's no fun either, is it?
Right. And you know, it's kind of what we're seeing in the wheat market as well, where you know, when our production levels are just down, we just don't export as much. And it's, you know, it's just not a vibrant, you know, piece of a particular commodities, you know, supply and demand picture. And yeah, well, we're kind of our corn crops are kind of stagnant here and seeing competition elsewhere. Yeah, it gets a challenging place to be.
Yeah, it certainly is. Okay. We are in the middle of a conversation with Mark Welch, professor and extension economist for grain marketing at Texas A&M University. Let's talk a little bit more about the demand side of the market, the domestic corn market, and then let's get over to soybeans. And then what do we do about it? What kind of risk management strategies do we need to consider?
Let's go to the markets page at profarmer.com and check today's closes. Where July HRW wheat futures were 6.5 cents higher at 579.5. July SRW wheat up 10.25 cents to 581.75. May corn futures were 1 penny lower, 434.25. December corn futures closed at 472.5, down 0.75 cents. May soybean futures a nickel higher, 11.85. November beans closed at 11.84.75, up 1 cent today. July cotton, 75 points lower on the day, 87.82. On your livestock, June fat cattle, $3.80 lower, 172.05. May feeder futures, $5.70 lower, 238.17.5. And on the snout side, June lean hog futures up $2.90 to 107.90. Get more market news every market day. Visit tryprofarmer.com.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. When news breaks, the newsmakers talk about it on AgriTalk with Chip Flory.
Welcome back. I'm Chip. Glad you're with us. We are in the middle of a conversation with Mark Welch, professor and extension economist for grain marketing at Texas A&M University. So, Mark, you got me thinking about this when we were talking about China and, you know, their hog numbers, their total feed demand, how difficult it is to measure. I kind of feel the same way about U.S. feed demand this year, Mark, that my level of confidence in the estimate of how much corn for feed we're using this year is pretty low. What do you think about it?
You know, and certainly that is an issue as we put together our balance sheets, trying to do our price forecast.
Yeah.
When you think of the number one use of corn here in the U.S. that we don't measure, that one You know, we can track exports and we track, you know, ethanol use or corn for fuel pretty closely and know our food use numbers. But no, the biggest category of all, we don't know that number. And so that's why those grain stocks reports are so important is, you know, we kind of try to keep track of how many animal units are out there consuming feed, whether it's poultry or pork or in the cattle industry. And, you know, kind of try to keep up what kind of what we think that number ought to be. But it's really only that reset we get every quarter with the grain stocks that kind of gives us some indication if we're on track. But one thing that I've noticed over the last several years, even though we may be building back the number I track from USDA is grain consuming animal units.
Okay.
And so it's basically the number of whether it's broiler chicks or feeder pigs or feeder steers, it takes to equal 1,000-pound dairy cow. That's a grain consuming animal unit. Well, that number's been coming down the last few years and maybe kind of bottoming out. But we know with our cattle inventory numbers, we've got fewer cattle on feed on the horizon probably sooner rather than later. You know, there's going to be a real challenge keeping up those numbers in the feedlots. I don't think there's any question about that. Now, will the poultry industry and the pork industry respond to take up some of that, make up some of that difference? I think that could play out. And so that's kind of what we watch. But if you just track the amount of energy feed, and we're talking about corn, that we feed per grain-consuming animal unit, it's in a downward trend. So in other words, our livestock industry in general, pork, poultry, and cattle, is getting much more efficient at producing protein per pound of grain. You know, just like our ethanol industry, we're getting more gallons of fuel from every bushel of corn. We're doing the same thing there. So even if we do see some rebound in the absolute numbers of animal units out there, again, that's going to be tempered to some degree, but just how efficient that industry has gotten. I think that's a concern that I have. If you look at the projections from USDA, for instance, back at the Outlook Conference in February for feed use, you know, getting that backup number, you know, 5.7, 5.8 billion bushels, that's a pretty strong number, you know, given what's going on in our livestock industries today. Now, corn is cheap. So if that helps anything, if that provides some incentive, well, there you got that going for you.
Exactly.
That's a tough one to track.
So I get the animal consuming unit, and I've done the same thing. What I'm wondering is, do we need to make some adjustments there? Because the cattle, they're not weighing a little bit more. They're weighing a lot more than what they did a year ago.
Right. And that will be interesting to see how this plays out, of course, with as the absolute number, just the cow herd, as small as it has gotten. And then if we start to rebuild and retain heifers and not putting those in the yard, well, that's even going to tighten it up even more.
Yeah.
You know, when we start to roll over to that phase of the industry. I think on the cattle side, we've got significantly smaller numbers coming in. And so I'm concerned, yes, about domestic growth in the U.S. corn market from the aspects of feed. With gasoline demand, we're not growing that in this country, in this current environment. So that's limiting, you know, growth in fuel use short term. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at corn for ethanol. And so that leaves us then with the export category. Well, we got a lot of competition out there, you know, in that one too.
Yeah, and doggone it, it's gotten to the point where I need to adjust how I track the exports too. You can't really use the inspections numbers anymore because the census numbers are so much different than the inspections numbers on the corn exports, right?
It's hard then to get a real handle on what those numbers you know, really are in real time.
Yeah.
But I guess, you know, the kind of the things that we do know is that we do have, you know, strong competition from other parts of the world that is growing in terms of their share of that world export market. And when they make a crop, whether it's Australia making wheat or Brazil making corn or Argentina making soybeans, you know, whatever that might be, that we've got some headwinds.
Gotcha.
Put the value of the dollar against that. It can be some real challenges for us. And that's where we are across both of our grain and oilseeds markets right now. That export picture for corn, for wheat, for soybeans. Now, grain sorghum looks pretty good.
I was just going to ask you that.
It's kind of making its own path. But again, we have basically one export market for U.S. grain sorghum, and that's China. Yeah. And everything else being equal, China really likes our grain sorghum. Yep. So we're basically the source of grain sorghum in the world, and they are the market. And so at this point, that's pretty healthy situation for us on the grain sorghum side. Yeah, but otherwise, it's tough.
But sorghum still isn't taking that many acres or building acres. It's pretty consistent, isn't it?
It really is. And in terms of the projections in for 2024, when we're looking at our grain sorghum, we're just not growing. Yes, the area that we're playing for grain sorghum and across many of the southern plain states, I think, you know, Kansas, Oklahoma, and Texas, our corn acres, you know, aren't growing that much either. We've got, you know, it's a pretty challenging environment, you know, for many of these grain crops. One thing I am looking for, however, is that with a better moisture situation, we're the tail end of an El Nino, but hopefully it'll hang on here for a few more months. That gives us a better production season for our spring crops out here in the southern plains, just like our wheat crop is in really, really good shape, you know, compared to where we've been the last 2 or 3 years. That's typically good for grain sorghum too. And so even though we may not expand acres that much, I'm looking for a much improved production year for U.S. grain sorghum here in 2024.
Okay, gotcha. What are the conversations with marketers sound like this winter? Mark, what kind of strategies are they considering? What do they need to get done?
Yeah, of course, you know, that's a pretty depressing conversation with just the slide that we've seen in these markets. And, you know, we caught a little bit of I hope it's a bottom in these markets and kind of thinking about the December corn contract, you know, bouncing back up to 480. It's not really a great upward trend, but it's better than 450.
Yep.
But I think this may be the kind of year that it really watching those nickels and dimes wherever we can find them. Certainly on the cost side, the input cost side of it's not showing much relief, and so being as efficient as we possibly can on the input side and in our total cost structure of our farms and ranches, fixed costs, variable costs, whatever we can do to try to keep that component down while maintaining productivity. And then if we have those marketing opportunities, perhaps to even get a little something done at a price that kind of works, get a floor price on some of these little rallies. You know, I hope we still have a spring rally ahead of us. As we've kind of talked here, there's a lot of things that could still perhaps spur us, a little bit higher as we typically would do going into, the middle of June before we kind of, you know a lot more about this U.S. corn crop. And so those opportunities may be there, but it may be 10 and 15 cent rallies. That may be what we've got for the time being. And so if that gives us a chance maybe to get a little something done and to make that decision, if you're going to do something like that, do you know when you talk about is the price good enough? Well, what do you need out of that crop this year? I'm thinking production-wise, things are shaping up to be pretty good here in the U.S. this year. I think we can be a much better production-wise than we were a year ago. And so, you know, factor that in. And does 470 on the board work with your local basis? Can you talk to your grain elevator manager or your merchandiser or where you're going? Can you get another nickel or dime, you know, on that basis side and catch a nickel or a dime on the rally on the board? You know, those little things could add up, and that might be the difference on the marketing side. Yeah. Combining that with an efficient input. There you go.
I hear you saying. You got to build the price. Don't be passive in your marketing this year. You've got to take an aggressive approach to it and find a way to build that price.
And we're getting to a time of year that we're going to get so busy doing other stuff.
Yep.
Who in the operations keeping their eye on that, where those nickels and dimes may be available. And maybe we need to kind of spread some of that responsibility, you know, farm that piece of your operation out too, whether someone in your operation that really likes that kind of stuff, you know, bring them in and let them help us, you know, and guide us. Cause we're fixing to get really, really busy doing some other things.
Yeah.
Things we probably like to do better.
Yeah.
And, but don't keep her off that, take her off that other ball either.
Yeah. That's good. That's good counsel right there, Mark, because it give somebody ownership in at least some of the marketing. And if you give them the ownership in it, you'll find out what they're capable of and what a, kind of a disciplined or an active approach to the marketing might do to you. That's a great idea. Great idea. So appreciate it.
And maybe that takes some of your emotion out of it. And I think there's a big advantage when it comes to marketing to any degree of rationality, objectivity, and try to remove some of that emotion. And I think that's a spreading it out is a nice way to do that.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Mark, great conversation, man. Thank you so much.
Always enjoy it. Look forward to the next time.
Yeah, excellent. Excellent. I appreciate that. Okay, that is Mark Welch, professor and extension economist for grain marketing at Texas A&M University. All right. We got to wrap up what has been kind of a crazy week. Take a look at some of the outside markets. Davis, we should even talk a little bit about what's happened in crude and some of the other markets that we don't talk about a lot. We'll do that next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
I don't know what you're thinking. So call us at 855-4-TALK-AG and tell us what's on your mind.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip. Great conversation there with Mark Welch from Texas A&M. Brian, thank you. I'm shout out to Brian at WRDN up in Durand, Wisconsin for hitting me up and saying, hey, knucklehead, pay attention to what's going on in milk futures, which made me reach out, or Big Apple, Joe Stackler, to reach out to Brian Doherty at Total Farm Marketing. Brian joins us right now. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, Chip, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Good, good, good. So, okay, with everything that's happening, with the big sell-off in the live cattle market and the feeder cattle market, when you look down to the Class 3 milk futures, and you see a 35 to 50 cent rally in those contracts there, it kind of makes me scratch my head and wonder what the heck is going on, Brian. So what the heck is going on?
Yeah, well, the milk market had been sorely sort of, let's call it, beat down. We had a couple of things come out. February cheese export data was released yesterday, was up 32% year over year. And cheese prices have been pretty hard to press. So I think that was sort of the trigger point to get cheese buyers sort of riled up and get moving into the market in a bigger way. They might have been sitting on their hands with all this uncertainty with HPAI and how that might affect livestock herds. And it seems like the cattle market sort of went defensive late in the week on maybe concerns of demand. Milk market's already cheap enough, way oversold. Good to see the bounce. Good to see the aggressive cheese buying. So I think it's that simple is what I think. But bottom line is it's a good jump in the cheese market and some short covering today. If you're a chartist, you're looking at May milk, closed right at the 10-day moving average yesterday, but Chip pushed up through the 21-day moving average, closed above it. We have not seen that since February 28th. So good technical strength today as well.
And busting some resistance at the downtrend too.
And busting some resistance at the downtrend, right. Depending on which chart you look at, you've got a pretty steep downtrend line there. So, yeah, a lot of times a market like that where it just doesn't kick in and finally it does, you get a lot of people heading for the gates at one time, whether it's those exiting their short positions or bottom pickers. Or like we said, it looks like we got some, you know, concrete data that really said that the export market is picking up. The dollar has not risen lately. It's not dropped much, but it's stabilized. That might be maybe a contributing factor as well.
Okay. Okay. Has this got some legs to it, do you think, Brian? Can this move continue?
I think the problem with the milk market isn't so much the milk market. It's been the demand market and worries about the economy. And we saw numbers today that say, well, the economy is still pretty strong, right? So mm-hmm. I think the bottom line is demand. If we kind of step back, we've had consumer demand be questionable here in the U.S., export demand down over this past year. So if we can kind of get that demand revved up, that'll certainly help out because the value is there. The value is there in price. Look where milk is priced. That's value to the end user. But from a big picture perspective, I think the marketplace has been very tepid with the demand. End users are buying as needed, and it seems like the consumer has been buying as needed. So that's really the key, is to get good demand to cycle back into the marketplace.
Yeah, boy. And right now it's appearing that milk market is proving that low prices can fix low prices, and the demand is coming back in there. What do you make of this cattle trade this week, Brian? Good Lord.
Well, I'm surprised at today, and I'm still trying to get my hands around sort of this dump out or this collapse, in particular the feeder, I'm going to call it a collapse, the feeder market. A good stabilization the last 3 days, and all of a sudden we take it right out again today. I think that the drop off in some of the product values and concerns at the primal cuts, just, you know, again, we go back to this economy, we get good numbers, but, you know, kind of keep this in mind that we see where the energy market has been moving higher. And that cuts into consumer dollars. We've had kind of a crappy weather scenario here in the last week, two weeks in the eastern half of the United States. The early start to the grilling season's probably been hampered. You've got some reduction in choice and select cut values. I want to think it's just more sort of the week-to-week cycle more than I am concerned. But there again, the traders, the market moves on perception. If there's a perception concern with beef, with this avian flu, that might be a concern. So we've been defensive postured or encouraging that with put options, but I'm not a bear on the supply side. It's just hard to argue anything.
Right.
But friendly on the supply side. Right.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. Hey, buddy, I really appreciate you jumping on. Thank you.
My pleasure, Chip. Thank you.
All right. Have a great weekend. That is Brian Doherty, Total Farm Marketing by Stuart Peterson, jumping on and giving us a hand, filling us in on what's happening. Good export demand on the cheese, helping us out there. Cheese market helping out the milk market. Hopefully not a direct tie to the HPAI. What a confusing week, Davis.
Yeah. A lot happened this week.
I mean, we've talked about it several times about how the risk of HPAI to the milk market, to the beef market, the consumer risk is really, really, really low, really low. You got to go out of your way and expose yourself to some risk for there to be risk of this virus getting into your food supply. You've got to seek it out. Let's understand that. If you just follow your normal shopping and grocery stores, you're going to be just fine there. All right, real quick, National Weather Service 6 to 10 day outlook, April 11th through the 15th. Above normal temperatures expected over the entire Corn Belt. We've got below normal precipitation expected over southern North Dakota, South Dakota, Nebraska, Kansas, Missouri, Iowa, most of Minnesota. Near normal precip expected in Wisconsin, Illinois, and Arkansas. And then above normal precip expected to the east of that. When you jump out to the 8 to 14 day, the above normal temperatures stick around. Let's just call it near normal precip in the west and below normal precip expected in the eastern Corn Belt. Below normal. All right. Have a great weekend, everybody. Come back on Monday morning. Senator Chuck Grassley and Machinery Pete.